I laughed. I thought it was brilliant. Good on you, Donald. I'm the Rocket Man, yeah. I mean, Donald's always been a fan of mine, and he's been to my concerts many, many times. Yeah, when he did that, I just thought it was hilarious. It made me laugh.
Okay, it's not an endorsement, but still, kind words from Elton John for Donald Trump.
Oh, that's what that was.
Not a bad way for Donald Trump to start the week. Hey, welcome, everybody. The Commute with Carl. I'll give you the context here in a minute, radio legend. The Commute with Carl's and Talk Radio 570 KVI underway. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. We've got a very important week ahead for both the presidential and the gubernatorial race. Tomorrow, Donald Trump squares off against Kamala Harris. This is their only scheduled debate, the only one that she would agree to. And it's going to take place tomorrow, I believe, 6 o'clock?
Correct. Six o'clock Pacific.
Yeah. ABC, yes.
9 p.m. Eastern.
Fox is going to simulcast it. So
yes, it's going to be
simulcast. I'm guessing the other networks will, too.
On a bunch of networks. Yeah. ABC is the official host.
Is it correct, John, real quick, that Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump have never met?
Nope. They've never met.
Oh, this is That's going to be good.
Usually you would think they had at least been in the same room together since she was in the United States Senate during the 4 years of his presidency.
And people made a ruckus about Trump previous to his running for president funding a campaign for her for attorney general in California. So he had contributed to a campaign of hers. Yeah. Before any of them ended up in Washington, D.C.
He had politically given to both sides, and I understand that coming from New York, because in New York, when you're a developer, you're and most of the politicians in New York are Democrats, you just want to give to the less unfair, less liberal.
You hedge your bets, yeah, I think, is what you're trying to say, John.
You play both sides, you hedge your bets. And he actually was criticized a lot for that when he first began to run. So we'll see what eventually transpires. And then after the presidential debate, there's the governor's debate. And this is, I believe, Bob Ferguson has refused any more invitations to debate. Usually you have, when I ran against Gary Locke, we had three debates, and he was an incumbent, and he didn't have to agree to any more than one, didn't have to agree to any. And I really enjoyed those debates, but Bob Ferguson is playing the same game that the Democrats are playing on the national level, which is you don't have to debate, don't do it. You don't have to do interviews. Don't do it. Don't talk in any detail about what you really want to do, because that's just going to hurt you. Just run out there with three or four positions that are more or less close to where Washington voters are, and let them, you know, and just have that be your platform. Kamala Harris is doing the same thing. Beware of politicians who fear the public. Beware of politicians who fear debate. If the race is reasonably close, then there's no reason not to let the people hear both sides. I mean, we constantly hear about left-wing bias, and of course, liberals complain about Fox News right-wing bias. Okay, well, when candidates are debating, they're right there together. They're right there together at the same time speaking for themselves. What could be more unbiased than that? Even though I think the questions will be biased against Donald Trump. It's an ABC debate, after all. So we will give Dave Reichert will have his chance to shine, and he's got a poll showing growing momentum and Ferguson stalling. You know, he won the primary by over 15 points. I mean, he led the primary over Reichert, and again, it was a 24-person field, by over 15 points, And the latest poll just out shows that margin closing to about 4 points. So Reichert has been steadily gaining ground. He has to do well tomorrow.
So tomorrow night's going to be very important. Big, there's always
big night for the presidential debate, big night for the gubernatorial.
But right, we got to name the third big thing happening tomorrow night that people are jumping on right now, too, just thinking it's ironic to have this on such a night of debates. Mega Millions jackpot, 800 million, everybody. Yes. Find your numbers, get creative between Trump and Harris and Reichert and Ferguson, and maybe you'll be a winner on such a unique night.
Yeah. Great reminder, Mark Christopher. When do they draw the winner?
It'll be 8 o'clock Seattle time. So this will be right after. Let's see how far that first debate goes there for president debate.
Well, let's put it this way, ladies and gentlemen. If you win, then you won't really care that much who wins the debate. Or if you win, you'll have plenty of money to donate to the candidate of your choice.
Right. Okay? That's what I'm thinking. Win the jackpot, saying, okay, I won, so here's for my candidate, here's half the jackpot. Wouldn't that be a headline?
It is coming up on 10 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. We have a lot of other things going on in the news as well. There's a New York Times poll done by one of the most respected, the Times Siena poll, showing a reversal in the momentum of the race for president. Kamala Harris had been in front of Donald Trump by 3 points in the last poll taken about 3 weeks ago. She was in the middle of being bathed in adoration by the news media and was right in front of the Democratic National Convention, where, again, adulatory hosannas coming from the media, mainstream media, misnamed mainstream media, and very little criticism. Well, this New York Times poll shows that momentum has stalled. Stalled to the point where Donald Trump has now pulled back in front. We'll look at this poll and what it means in some detail coming up on the commute. It was a great week if you're a football fan for the Seahawks and the Huskies and the Washington State University Cougars. Our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson, is going to be joining us to talk about that. What do charter schools really look like up close? Liberals say that they're the first step toward privatization. They don't like them. They like the uniform public schools. Defenders say they could be the salvation of the public schools because the public schools in many places just aren't cutting it. We'll take you inside one such charter school. But first, we got to clear this up here for the radio legend, Mark Christopher. Over the weekend, Elton John was asked about by a reporter about Donald Trump referencing his song Rocket Man. And, of course, that was one of the songs that helped make Elton John's career. Crocodile Rock was the real hit, but Rocket Man was right in there too. He obviously asked the question expecting Elton John to say, I really take umbrage at people with political views like Donald Trump appropriating my music, like some other more woke artists have said. And, you know, with Elton John, known for being liberal, known for being gay and a supporter of same-sex unions and the like, you would expect that that was going to happen, except that's not what happened. He was being interviewed by a reporter with Variety. Variety is the Hollywood industry newspaper of record. Here's how it went down.
I know that you're not a supporter of Donald Trump's. He loves your music. how did it feel when he took the lyrics to Rocket Man and he used it as a nickname for Kim Jong-un, and then he gave Kim Jong-un...
I laughed. CD. I thought it was brilliant. I just thought, good on you, Donald. I'm the Rocket Man, yeah. I mean, Donald's always been a fan of mine, and he's been to my concerts many, many times. So, I mean, I've always been friendly towards him, and I thank him for his support. Yeah, when he did that, I just thought it was hilarious. It made me laugh.
He gave Kim one of your CDs and signed it. That was in one of the books about him, because Kim, I guess, didn't know the song, so...
What's that?
He gave Kim Jong-un the signed CD.
Yes.
You know, which never heard of it.
I know, because he hasn't heard of me, Kim Jong-un. Maybe I'd be very surprised if he had. I've never toured North Korea, and I have no intention of doing so. I thought it was a light moment, and it was fun.
Well, he thought it was brilliant that Donald Trump used Rocket Man.
That's pretty cool. You know, hey, he comes to my concert still. Maybe I don't support him, but still, you know, he's there for me. He supports me in what I do. Spreads my music, sells music here.
I will tell you this. I have always liked Elton John, even when I disagree with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only is he insanely talented.
Sure.
He's also a very kind man. He's a very good person.
Well, think of the celebrities, John. Music, Hollywood, whatever, during this year, and it's been a crazy one. And how many times you've seen some of your favorites, and all of a sudden, do you say they go overboard in their belief and who they favor in these elections? And then it kind of disturbs you where, I don't think I can watch a movie ever again. I don't think I can listen to a song ever again. Elton John's, that's a good example. You know, I mean, he's got his opinion, he's got his thought, but still, it's like, hey, you know, he's a human being, I'm a human being, I've got something I offer to the people, Donald Trump's got something to offer to people, so it's kind of like, you know, he knows his territory. He handles it well.
Appreciates him as a fan.
Yeah.
That's just, again, I've seen this from Elton John over the years. The way he reacted when the famous designer of Versace was shot and killed.
Right.
The way he reacted and what he did when Diana was tragically killed in that car crash back in 97, I think mm-hmm. it was. I mean, there have been numerous instances where he could have, you know, been petulant or thrown a celebrity tantrum, and he just doesn't. And I just really think it's because he's centered.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just a very kind, reasonable, decent human being.
He knows where he stands with his fans and the world and his part in this whole game we call of life. Real quick update. I did a report on him over the weekend. He's had a real bad eye infection in one of his eyes where it's taken him off stage. He's getting it handled. He says it's okay. It's going to take a little time, but I will be back.
I thought he was done touring.
Yeah, well, he's still kind of like...
Remember the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour played Tacoma? I thought that was the last concert.
He's still around saying, you know, I play my piano, I got my band, we can play here and there and everywhere. So maybe on call, we'll see what happens. But he's doing good if you heard anything about his one eye.
All right. Also coming up here on the commute with Carlson this morning, a woman steals a car while in search of drugs, hits another car. When police are trying to get her, she apparently has warrants out for her arrest in three separate jurisdictions, three separate counties, cities, and has a record of 49 arrests. Again, you've got to ask yourself, why is someone like this even allowed to walk anymore? Why is she out walking or driving anywhere in a free society when this is how she has used that time in a free society to rack up literally more than 4 dozen arrests? Anyway, we will bring you details about what happened there, and also the young graduate, actually she's 26 years old, just graduated from the University of Washington, a student who was killed in Israel at a demonstration last week, and It's very tragic. Of course, someone killed. She was apparently not armed. It is unclear why she was hit with gunfire. You've heard, perhaps, that the demonstration followed a prayer vigil, suggesting these are all very peaceful peaceful demonstrators silently protesting injustice in the West Bank. It's odd to note that there were also one Israeli soldier and a couple of police officers who were killed, which usually doesn't happen from peaceful, prayerful demonstrators. We will try and find out more about what's going on, and we'll tell you a little bit more about her as well. Her name, Iskenora Ije. We'll get you more information about her and what happened. It's a busy morning on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Can't do that, Jim. You're 6 feet under. Welcome back to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Jim Morrison in the Doors.
Remember, Jim, consenting adults. Consenting adults. That's important.
It is coming up here on 25 minutes after 6 o'clock, which means our first social media sweep of the week with Philip J. Vandervoort III.
No school today in the Highline School District. Did you hear why, John?
I did not.
Possible cyberware, ransomware attack. We're still trying to piece together the specifics. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. B-Town blog, the news website for Berrien,
yes,
posted all Highline schools be closed Monday due to technology compromise. Seattle Times is reporting on this. 35 schools, 17,000 students in the district south of Seattle.
It's a good-sized district.
Holly Menino from Como 4, morning news anchor over there. Highline Public Schools canceling all classes, activities, athletics, and meetings due to a potential cyber attack. And they haven't said in specific terms, but it definitely makes you wonder, is this going to be a ransomware attack situation? The Seattle Public Library system was crippled for several months all over the summer due to a ransomware attack a little bit earlier this year. Richland, the city of Richland over in Tri-Cities earlier this year, hit with a ransomware attack. Last year, Lakewood, the city in Pierce County, and Pierce Transit were both hit with ransomware attacks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what shakes out with this. But for now, schools canceled for the Highline School District south of Seattle.
All right.
The Washington Post is putting this story out on social media. A lot of other news outlets posting the story from WAPO about what was known on the morning of the high school fatal mass shooting in Georgia, outside Atlanta, mm-hmm. Appalachie High School. And the Washington Post is now reporting that the mother of the 14-year-old accused shooter, Colt Gray, Gray's mother called the school in an attempt to warn them, saying she had concerns about things her son was saying related to a possible shooting.
This is a very important update from last week, because we reported last week that there had been a call made on the morning of the attack at Appalachie High to the schools warning that there was going to be a shooting incident there. Mm-hmm. And we said we don't know where it came from. And now apparently we're learning from the Washington Post that it came from the mother of the shooter.
Yeah, according to the story,
the 14-year-old shooter.
The mother called the school to report that she was concerned that her kid might be involved in a threat or a shooting. A school administrator who ended up speaking to the mother somehow ended up entering the suspect's math class around that time. But according to the report from the Washington Post, there was a misunderstanding that arose involving another student with a similar name. That school administrator mistakenly confiscated a backpack belonging to the other student. Neither the accused shooter nor the student with the similar name was in the class at that time. And then it was minutes after that, that the gunfire started. So that's what the Washington Post is reporting. And, of course, last week we learned that...
They confronted the wrong student.
Yeah, and last week...
They had warning, but confronted the wrong student.
And we found out last week that the suspected shooter's mother and father have been estranged, have all kinds of conflict and problems going on in their life. So that is one of the other aspects of that
story. And it was a Christmas
story.
Gift? I was gone last week. It was a Christmas gift from the dad to the son?
I think that's how it was explained.
They're saying no.
Yeah.
Well, do they know that it was a weapon or that weapon?
I guess I maybe haven't heard specifics on that, but that was the inference that I heard from some of the previous reporting.
But still, keep in mind, the father gives the son a gun after the FBI comes to visit about this threat.
And this is going to be a problem for the father in the prosecution of this case.
Probably not the best idea.
In that FBI investigation that turned into no charges, there was an indication that the dad said that the child had supervised access to the guns, but no unsupervised access to the guns.
Well, by the way,
age of Cole again.
And then he allegedly bought 14. A gun.
14.
Yeah.
14. 13 at the time the FBI
of the
came.
Investigation,
14 at the time
right.
of the shooting
now 14.
Itself. So we still have some unanswered questions, namely, did the FBI tip off the school about this student?
Yeah, you were bringing that up, and that's a great question.
Because if they were so alarmed that they would go to visit the household, did they say, you know, the tip off the school, hey, look, not enough for us to make an arrest, but you should really know this kid's on our radar, and you should be very careful. I don't know that the FBI ever did that. There's no indication that this guy was being scrutinized, supervised, let alone suspended or expelled by that school before the shooting. So did the FBI tell the school what it knew? And if not, why not? It is 6:30 in the morning, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570. We actually do take music requests. I think the only news talk station that does, going in or out of commercial break, we have a little bit of fun. Hits from the 60s during the 6 o'clock hour, as you've been hearing. Hits from the 70s during the 7 o'clock hour, and from the 80s and beyond during the 8 o'clock hour. So if there's a song you want to hear, go ahead, tell us the song. Tell us why you like it, at why it has special meaning for you, at 206-421-5757. Just text your request. 206-421-5757. I'm imagine we've played a couple of thousand requests by now.
Well, it's good. It just gives you a break from all the busy world that you find and learn about here with the Carlson Commute. Just, you know, 10 seconds of Mrs. Robinson, Sunday afternoon on the couch, going to the big debate. Boy, are we ever tomorrow night.
Couple of debates.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the presidential debate between Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, and the gubernatorial debate, Dave Reichert, Bob Ferguson, that which follows the presidential debate. All right. Here's a story that should be raising eyebrows. Several suspected ISIS, that would be the Islamic State, ISIS terrorists arrested in Indonesia for plotting to assassinate Pope Francis during his visit to the country. Seven suspects were arrested early last week in various cities of the country. Investigators say they don't know whether or not they're members of the same terror cell. A drone was apparently seized from one of their homes. The terrorists were planning to kill Pope Francis because of his visit to Jakarta's Istiqlal Mosque and the government's appeal to television stations allegedly to refrain from the usual broadcasting of the Islamic call to prayer while a live broadcast of Pope Francis' visit was in session. While he was speaking at the presidential palace in Jakarta, the Pope called out terrorists who act in the name of faith. Now, keep in mind, Indonesia is an overwhelmingly Islamic country. 87% of the country's citizens there identify as Islamic, and nearly all of the Muslims, 99%, are believed to be Sunni Muslim. Quote, there are times, this from Pope Francis, there are times when faith can be manipulated to foment divisions and increase hatred. He said prejudices can be eliminated and a climate of mutual respect and trust can grow. Obviously, he was there at the invitation of the Islamic government there in Indonesia. But it's, you know, just one more sign. I mean, when a Muslim politician or a Muslim cleric travels to a largely Christian, if not by government, at least by culture, Christian country, do they fear being assassinated by Christian fanatics or fundamentalists? No. Do they, when they go to Israel, when Islamic officials travel to Israel, do they fear assassination? No. In fact, the Israeli government protects them. There are Muslims in the Knesset, in the equivalent of the Israeli Congress. There are Muslims who represent their Muslim constituents. You don't see Jews or Christians in the government of Islamic republics. It is a one-way street, and the religious intolerance that we see is largely one way. And there's the latest manifestation of it. Arrests made in a plot to kill the Pope, which luckily were unsuccessful. Only now are we learning about those arrests. Okay, let's bring it back home here, shall we? Over the weekend, a fatal wrong way truck crash in Olympia kills a 70-year-old woman, leaves two other people ailing. The fatal crash stemmed from an attempt by a woman to buy fentanyl just a few miles away in Lacey, just a few miles north of Olympia. Como 4's Jackie Kent explains how the fatal crash subject was asking people in Lacey about acquiring fentanyl. We're also going to learn a lot more about this woman. And it leaves you shaking your head. Why is someone like this even walking the streets or driving them in the first place?
A life lost in a bad crash in Olympia. Washington State Patrol says the incident started in Lacey when a woman who was driving a black truck approached several people and asked for fentanyl. When someone told her to leave, authorities claim she tried to run over one person and drove away, and Thurston County deputies responded.
When they attempted to stop that truck, the truck fled. The driver in the truck fled. They initiated a pursuit.
State Patrol is handling the investigation.
As of right now, I can't speak to motives. I can't speak to thought processes of the deputies involved.
The suspect reached Olympia and police used spike strips, but the woman kept going and in the wrong lane of busy Pacific Avenue crashed into another car head on. A 70-year-old woman was killed and two others were badly hurt.
They tried to stop her with spike strips. She just kept driving. I'm assuming under the influence of fentanyl. The woman is, how do we say it, familiar to police? Usually people with more than 45 previous arrests are familiar to police. Here's more.
We looked at online records. They show she has been arrested 47 times before and has 4 felony convictions. She also has active warrants in Issaquah, Seattle, and Renton.
Active warrants, meaning they're looking for her. Well, I don't know if it means Seattle they're not looking for. They have such a backlog that they don't care. Well, they might care, but they don't do anything. You know. Issaquah, Renton, basically the only time you pinch someone with an outstanding warrant is if you happen to be arresting them in other circumstances or pulling them over in other circumstances.
Well, it indicated 3 outstanding arrest warrants in 3 jurisdictions in King County. So obviously this female is avoiding or attempting to avoid arrest because something serious is going to happen if she's caught. That's the only thing I can put together from yesterday.
Oh, no, she knows that.
That's why she's fleeing. She knows.
Desperate to get away because they know they've got her dead to rights in 3 jurisdictions.
Then again, conversely, 47 arrests, only 4 convictions. So maybe
4 felony convictions. Yeah. Didn't say how many.
That's
true.
That's a good point. There could be a bunch of misdemeanor convictions.
So all the programs, all the money that's been being spent to help these people or whatever, how does she escape all that and nobody has made an attempt to help her, maybe get some help on this?
Perfect question.
Well, the other thing is, with 49 arrests, do you think she only committed 4 felonies?
Another good math equation there.
And, you know, at what point are we going to adopt the logic of 3 strikes, you're out, which in the first 20 years that 3 strikes you're out was law. We saw violent crime in Washington State tumble about 50%. It is because we went after the repeat serial offenders. That's the whole focus is on go after the repeat serial offenders, the people who've been given chances, who've had breaks before, and they just keep committing violent crimes. And the specter of getting 1 or 2 strikes on your record is what encourages a lot of people to either shape up or literally ship out. They leave the state. When are we going to imitate that logic and have extraordinary penalties for people once they hit their 5th felony? Okay, even if it's not life in prison, why isn't it an extra 10 years? Why is that unreasonable for someone convicted of a 5th felony? And a legislation like that doesn't have a chance in today's Olympia. But you know what? 3 strikes, you're out didn't have a chance in the 90s, the liberal legislature at that time, large Democratic majorities, wouldn't even give the 3 strikes, you're out proposal a hearing. Nor did they give a hearing to hard time for armed crime. The people did it themselves. Looks like the people have to fix this problem themselves as well. It's 48 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Checking in with our good buddy Lars Larson, our Noon to 3 host, as the commute rolls along. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning,
Johnny, Phil, Philip, Mark, Marcus. I don't think you could do Lars with this song.
Again, I hear songs like this hitting, you know, that make the charts, and you say someone got royalties for this.
I know.
Someone made money with those words, writing those words. All right. It is 7 to 7 on the John Carlson Show. Speaking of words, and someone who is very gifted in the use of words, our good buddy Lars Larson, our Noon to 3 host. Good morning, Lars.
Good morning, John. I feel so privileged because I have a restroom right next to my studio, and I have a key to the place.
Yes.
Just saying.
Well, I have one myself, but when you set it down on the counter and probably, luckily, someone was there to open the door when I was banging on it.
Let the host back in, yeah.
So what do you make of this New York Times poll? A New York Times poll shows that the lead that Kamala Harris opened up over Donald Trump in the weeks after she was replace Joe Biden, who was asked to leave and obediently did when the tone got heavy. She had a 3-point lead, and according to the same poll, the New York Times Siena poll, she's now down 1 point.
Doesn't surprise me, because I think they're playing a smart strategy at the Democrat Party. Keep her out of sight and keep her mouth shut, because the more she talks and the more people get an impression of what she really is. You know, I'm not talking about the people who follow politics like you and me closely, but the people who are just saying, oh, so she's the nominee. Okay, what do you know about her? The more she talks and the more you hear no answers coming out of her mouth, the worse it gets for her. Because people are going to say, this is the person who wants to be president of the United States, who, you ask her about inflation. Now, there are ways to address inflation, and some are popular with conservatives and some are popular with Democrats, and she didn't have either one of them. And if you think, wow, she wants the job, but she doesn't seem to know how to do it. If they can keep their own Democrats from getting that impression between now and, I mean, some of the ballots are literally going out right now.
Well, on the other hand, she may not be saying anything now, but she said stuff previously, and it's all on tape. I mean, you got the wonderful tape where she's talking about what a success Bidenomics is,
mm-hmm.
and how lucky America was to have Bidenomics. Well, if she doesn't want to talk about her association with Bidenomics, you've got it on tape. Play that tape and build an ad around it, because the news media probably are in no hurry to run that tape.
And play Reagan saying, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
Pretty clear answer to that question. Lars Larson, every day of the work week from noon to 3, hour number 2 right around the corner. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you ever so much letting me be part of your listening morning. It is, of course, the 9th day of September. Great way to start the week. The weather's going to be clearing up. It'll be getting into the low 70s.
You like the vibe of the office this morning, John? You know, we come off a weekend with all these sporting events, and there's always that one staff member just, you know, if something goes wrong, the whole staff feels it. I don't feel that today, and I found out why. Seahawks, Mariners, Huskies, Cougars, Seattle Storm, Seattle Sounders all won their games this weekend.
It was a good weekend. And in fact, we will even be going over that weekend with our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson, at the bottom of the hour. What I want to talk about now is, if you are in the military or if you are a veteran, and you're looking for something to do this afternoon, if you haven't already made plans, you ought to head out to the Washington State Fair at the Puyallup Fairgrounds. The annual Puyallup Fair going on today for the next couple of weeks. Guess what? It's Military Appreciation Day. So you get to go for free. All you have to do is show your military ID, and not only do you walk in the gates for free, so does your entire family. Free family admission for all veterans and active duty military. Veterans includes, of course, Guard and Reserve. You're all welcome to attend the Puyallup Fair today for free. And surprises on top of surprises. When you get there, the KVI booth this afternoon, who but Philip J. Vandervoort III is going to be there?
That's right. I'll get down there by noon. So look for me at the KVI booth. I think the booth should be near the fountain at the Gold Gate.
Oh, yeah.
That's where it's been in the past.
One of the main entrance areas.
Not too far from the grandstand area.
See, he says noon because he's dropping a hint that he'd like you to bring him a scone or an elephant ear or one of those massive
turkey legs. Something for lunch would be great.
So, Philip J. Vandervoort III today at the Puyallup Fair, the Washington State Fair, the Puyallup Fairgrounds, and it's free admission for all military families today, Military Appreciation Day. And we thank you for your service. You deserve a freebie like this. Okay. The New York Times Siena poll just out over the weekend has Democrats very nervous. That is because this poll showed that Kamala Harris 3 weeks ago was up over Donald Trump by 3 percentage points after a month of adulatory, glowing press coverage because Joe Biden got out of the race and she was being anointed, and then the Democratic convention, which was really more of a coronation. And this is the first recent poll. It was just done over the Labor Day weekend. Here's what it shows. She's no longer on top. Donald Trump has resumed his lead. Among likely voters, he's up 48% to 47%. When you bring the other candidates who are running into contention, Donald Trump is up 47-45%. Only 2% of the people who voted for Trump in 2020 indicate that they're going to vote for Kamala this time. But 6% of Biden voters indicate that they will be voting for Trump. Quote, "To me, the result is a bit surprising," writes Nate Cohn of the New York Times, pointing out that, you know, this poll does not reflect earlier polls. Well, that is because there hasn't been a high-quality, credible poll since the Democratic convention ended. And she was riding quite high up until then, you know, during the convention, right before the convention. There have been some online polls, but really nothing really credible until the Times Siena poll, which shows a 4-point shift. Mr. Cohn goes on to say, the poll nevertheless finds that Donald Trump has significant advantages in this election, and they might just be enough to put him over the top. This from a newspaper that despises Donald Trump. For instance, Trump has a clear advantage on the issues voters care most about. When asked to compare him with Kamala Harris, Donald Trump leads by 5 points. Here's an interesting disclosure in the poll. Voters see Donald Trump as more politically balanced. Nearly half of voters say when it comes to issues, he's not too far to the left and he's not too far to the right. A significant majority of voters believe that Kamala Harris is too far to the left. Now, she's desperately trying to play that down, but her record does speak for itself, which is why she doesn't want to talk about her record and why the media really don't talk about it much either. That means the Trump campaign needs to keep talking about it, which is why they're not hiding from the media. They're out there reminding the media what she's all about. I think I saw someone kept score, and this was as of Friday. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance's running mate have had 74 media interviews or press conferences. Kamala Harris and her running mate Tim Walz have had one.
Really? That's it?
One.
Hmm. I know everybody's impressed with Trump. He's really calmed down, talking calmly, just kind of just delivering a message.
When he's not shrieking, he is a very reasonable, persuasive guy, which is, we'll talk about this tomorrow because I'm not going to do, here's what Trump needs to do in the debate tomorrow. I'll do that tomorrow morning. We'll save that for day of. And I've got very clear ideas about what he needs to do and what he needs to avoid. But if he just is reasonable and speaks at room temperature, he's at a decisive advantage. Here's another problem for Kamala Harris. Nate Cohen saying what everyone out there, I think, already knows, which is the voters want change. And that Trump is seen as the change candidate. Here's how that's borne out in the numbers. 61% of the voters said they want the next president to bring a major change from Joe Biden. Only 3% don't want change. Well, how much major change from Joe Biden is Kamala Harris going to bring? And if she does bring major change, it would be from the left. She'd go even further to the left than Biden. So voters already see her as being too far to the left, and they want change, which means they want change back toward the right. This is a nation. This nation is center-right politically. Americans are moderate to moderately conservative. There are more conservatives than there are liberals. But you have a government that is ardently liberal, as the Democrats themselves admit, the most, quote, progressive, liberal, close quote, administration in our lifetime, going back at least as far as LBJ. So Americans want change, but they don't want more progressive policies. Kamala Harris is a progressive. So she can't run on what she really wants to do. And she can't run as continuing what Biden wants to do. She can only run on promising to be more conservative, which isn't persuasive because she's not, and everyone pretty much knows it. Now, if you've seen her ads, there was an ad that ran during the Seahawk game. You see her looking into the camera, speaking quite earnestly about giving middle-class Americans a tax cut. We are running $2 trillion deficits right now, and she says middle-class people deserve a tax cut. Not clear how she squares that circle. She hasn't said a word about reducing any federal spending by so much as a dime. So that is why the Democrats are keeping her under wraps and just trying to make the election about attacking Donald Trump. Doing everything they can to just demonize Donald Trump. That's all they can say. That's their platform. He's worse than we are. Donald Trump, not just objectionable, evil. Not just someone who will reverse our policies, but someone who will be a threat to democracy itself. We keep hearing this. Democracy is on the line, says the party that tried to keep Trump off the ballot and failed. Interesting, when you don't want people to have the opportunity to vote for who they want to vote for. A party that tried to drive Bobby Kennedy Jr. off the ballot when he was a third-party candidate, and then when he himself dropped out of the race and endorsed Trump, now they're trying to keep him on the ballot in states that he hasn't been driven off the ballot. So even though he's not in the race, they still want his name on the ballot because he endorsed Trump. You can't make this stuff up. So this is why this debate is so important. Kamala Harris is going to try and do to Donald Trump what Donald Trump did to Joe Biden, which was basically knock him out. You know, drop him to the canvas. And, of course, his party carried him off the canvas back to his corner and then clear out of the arena and out of the convention hall. Donald Trump almost certainly knows he's going to be baited throughout the evening.
Why am I visualizing a Vegas right now? They're going for a little bid tomorrow night. These two have never met before. You confirm that, John. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night when they first greet each other as they walk on, will they shake hand? Number one choice. Number two, just kind of nod, smirk. Or number three, just head to their podium.
Trump should go over and shake her hand. He should do what any gentleman would do. I'm guessing that whether there's going to be a handshake beforehand has already been worked out with both sides. That's probably something they negotiated over. The reason that the Kamala Harris campaign did not want the microphones muted when it's not their turn to speak, so if they start speaking, no one's going to hear it, is that she intended to speak out when Donald Trump was answering the question. Oh, no, that's not true, Mr. Mr. Trump, that's not true. She was going to, and then constantly try and needle him. And she's lost that opportunity. Not only that, but Donald Trump, who knew that Joe Biden was beginning to lose his faculties when they debated back in 2020. I mean, there's a reason they kept him in the basement for most of that campaign. They used COVID as the excuse, but they knew that he was having some difficulty even then. And so Trump was constantly, when they debated, constantly talking over him, constantly interrupting, and he was trying to rattle him. And Biden was not rattled. I think Biden knew it was coming. And he realized, just let him keep interrupting, and I may not win this debate, but he's going to lose it. And by golly, that's what happened. So because the microphones will be muted, that won't be happening in this debate. Donald Trump won't be interrupting, and she won't be interrupting him.
No audience either.
So no audience either. So, you know, that is a plus. The moderators for the debate, not a plus for Donald Trump, but I don't think that he's going to let that bother him. We'll see if the moderators are as tough on her as they are on him. I don't think they will be, but, you know, the CNN, during the Biden-Trump debate, at least the CNN moderators were fair. By and large, they were quite fair. And you know what? It's not hard to be fair. Really, it's not hard to be fair. They can be fair if they want to be. It's 20 minutes after 7 o'clock. When we come back, Philip J. Vandervoort III standing by with a social media sweep. Good morning. Not sure of everything you're saying there, James, but I quite concur. Get up and let's get moving on the John Carlson Show social media sweep with Philip J. Vandervoort III. What's going on, Phil?
I've got so much socialists on social media. We're going to have to start it a little early on the show today because next hour is going to be power packed.
I love
it. And we start this hour with Bernie Sanders, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Bernie Sanders, you know, his ideas are wackadoodle and would never work. And he's probably too honest for Democrats. But he was on Meet the Press yesterday, ostensibly campaigning for Kamala Harris, when Kristen Welker asked him if Kamala Harris is abandoning her progressive ideals. And God bless Bernie Sanders for being honest.
You have described Vice President Kamala Harris as a progressive. She has previously supported Medicare for all. Now she does not. She's previously supported a ban on fracking. Now she does not. These, Senator, are ideas that you have campaigned on. Do you think that she is abandoning her progressive ideals?
No, I don't think she's abandoning her ideals. I think she's trying to be pragmatic and doing what she thinks is right in order to win the election.
Doing what she needs to do in order to win an election.
Yeah, and then she'll go right back.
More than likely.
She'll go right back because that is who she is. She's not someone who's, I just can't make up my mind. No, she's made up her mind. And she was very clear, very definitive. That's part of who she's been all her political life. But now she needs to win an election. And Bernie Sanders has it right. She's changing her positions for the election.
Yeah.
She will go back.
I'll be interested to see if Trump invokes this comment from Bernie Sanders in tomorrow night's debate, because, you know, Trump is going to be going after Kamala Harris for these assorted viewpoints that she's now drastically changed from her run for president 2019-2020 to her ascendance as the 2024 nominee.
Yeah, Bernie's being an authentic, you know, he's being an honest leftist. Yeah. He's saying, yeah, she's changed her positions, but that's because she needs to win this election.
Kamala Harris is touting her economic campaign platform as an opportunity economy. I don't even know what that means, but that's the phrase she's using, opportunity economy. A couple of items on that. The Wall Street Journal has posted an opinion column that says Kamala Harris runs for president as businesses flee her state. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that she's been pretty either supportive or silent about all the things Gavin Newsom has done as the governor of California. And, you know, that's probably what's driving businesses, some businesses, away from California. So you've got that. J.D. Vance on social media posted about Kamala Harris and this quote-unquote opportunity economy. J.D. Vance wrote, Kamala Harris is the sitting vice president and let in millions of illegal aliens, driving up the cost of housing and dumping millions of people into already struggling communities. Remember that when she talks about an opportunity economy.
Yep.
Great point from J.D. Vance. Donald Trump has been promising he would create a government efficiency commission if reelected. That would be what he calls a complete financial and performance audit of the entire federal government if elected. And he says, and a lot of his supporters have heard about this, and they're now pointing to a Biden administration report from back in April that says every year the U.S. Treasury is cheated out of hundreds of billions of dollars. And back in April, April 16th, 2024, the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, reported that fraud risk management 2018 to 2022 data show federal government loses an estimated $230 billion to $520 billion annually to fraud based on various risk environments. So we talk about this idea of getting spending under control. What about getting fraud under control? Because the U.S. government is getting ripped off annually to the tune of $230 billion to $500 billion. So a couple years of fixing that, all of a sudden you've got $1 trillion that you didn't have before. And I teased that we're stacked up with socialists on social media.
You know, yeah.
Next hour, we'll get into Dick Cheney saying he's not voting for Trump, and all of the Democrats, all of the socialists who are thrilled with Dick Cheney saying he won't support Trump. I'll tell you about that irony next hour.
And I'll tell you why it's happening. you know, if it were based on issues or ethics, that would be one thing. It's because Donald Trump wrecked his daughter's political future when she tried to wreck Trump. It's personal, in other words. Nothing more, nothing less. Just a personal grudge. All right. We had a big, busy football weekend, including a Seahawks victory and a brand new coach. We'll have to check in with our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson, about that in just a moment on The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI at 7:30.
John, to the four winners we had, Legendary Lyrics, winning tickets to see the Doobie Brothers, Robert Cray, opening act Friday night here. What a show. This was a song they kicked it off with there with a big crowd.
They still got it.
I was there.
Still got it.
It was fun.
How did Robert Cray sound?
Yes, Pat Simmons said it best. Robert Cray Band plays the blues the way they should play the
beautiful
blues. What a compliment.
Beautiful.
Yeah, good crowd. A lot of fun.
All right. Of course, Mark Christopher was at the show.
With my daughters, first time we combined. They were like, come on, Dad, this is your era. Get up and dance.
It was not only...
You saw the guy in the VIP booth? That was me.
It not only was a great weekend for music, it was also a wonderful weekend for sports, which means we got to check in with our senior sports correspondent.
I was sitting with Matthew, we were watching TV. You said, hey Matthew, what do you see? Be their faces, do you know their names? Hey, hey Matthew, what do you see?
All right. It got a little close there for a while, but the Seattle Seahawks prevailed yesterday over the Denver Broncos. Matthew Carlson, good morning. What
it
do you think?
It is a good morning. The Seahawks are 1-0, and it was a weird one yesterday for a little bit.
Well, here's what I think. People will say, well, the Seahawks weren't half bad. Actually, for the first half, they were bad.
They were quite bad.
And then things changed. Do tell.
Yeah. So typically, when you have a 10-9 game, that could be, a touchdown, a field goal against three field goals. That was not the case in the first half of the Seahawks game yesterday. The Seahawks defense giving up not one, but two safeties.
Yeah.
In the first half. The NFL record for a game is three. So just a really funky start to the game. Geno Smith's first pass of the season was intercepted by the Broncos.
Yeah.
So a rocky start for first-year coach Mike McDonald and the Seahawks. First half was rough, but then the Seahawks roar back with 17 second-half points, and they put the Broncos away.
Well, I think we scored on our first three drives in the second half. Two touchdowns and a field goal there.
Yeah, two touchdowns and a field goal, and defense got a little stouter. They intercepted Nix.
Bo Nix, the rookie quarterback for Denver, who replaced, of course. Who did he replace?
Russell Wilson. Yeah. He did replace Russell Wilson. This was like the Russell Wilson Zombie Bowl. Bo Nix, by the way, no fan of the city of Seattle. That means he's now 0-3 against football teams from Seattle, losing to Washington twice.
The quarterback of the Oregon Ducks.
Yes. So he did okay. It was very much a rookie debut for him. Hopefully he has a good NFL career. He's a good guy. But the Seahawks defense had him figured out in the second half and were able to stifle the Broncos the remainder of the way. Just a fun game, though, especially particularly down the stretch. Marshawn Lynch was giving the head coach back rubs, telling him to relax.
Yeah, I saw that. That's kind of funny.
It just ended up being a good feeling win. Seahawks do have some stuff to work on. They have to go to the Patriots next week, who won their debut game under their first-year head coach as well. So it'll be two rookie head coaches facing off in Foxborough next Sunday.
That'll be fun. All right. And by the way, great debut for Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks, right?
Yes. Ryan Grubb called a very good game. called a good game. Seahawks ran for over 150 yards. Ken Walker had a good game. So
outstanding game.
Former
yes.
UW OC, despite not getting the UW head coaching job, definitely coming through in his debut as Seahawks offensive coordinator.
I think he was just stellar. Did a great job, and he appears to be a wonderful counterbalance with our brand new head coach.
Yes. So, yeah. So good. Seahawks fans have a lot of feelings to feel good.
Okay. So let's quickly go to the college ranks. Was Texas Tech supposed to defeat Washington State?
Texas Tech was sure supposed to fare better against Washington State.
They lose to the Cougars 37-16. Not even close.
The Cougars came out firing. It was Mike Leach Hall of Fame induction weekend, inducted into the Wazoo Hall of Fame. His family was there. They striped the stadium, which meant that, you know, fans in different sections wore different colors, and they packed the joint to the gills. And Washington State just came out firing, and it wasn't particularly close at any point in the game. So, yeah, 37-16. John Mateer, the quarterback, ran for 197 yards on 21 carries.
I think he set a record. Yeah,
that was a Wazoo record. And Washington State pretty easily dispatched the Red Raiders there.
So this is the second outstanding game in a row for this quarterback.
Yep.
So
yep, Washington State, you know, knows how to grow them out there on the Palouse. And John Mateer, who's from Little Elm, Texas, managed to put together a heck of a game. He'll have his biggest challenge of the year next week in Seattle in the neutral Apple Cup.
So, and then, of course, Matthew, there's the University of Washington Huskies. Yes. That one felt good.
Yep.
All right.
The Huskies dispatching Eastern Michigan from Ypsilanti. Your mother taught me how to say that.
That is it.
Broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
30-9. All they could muster was three field goals, and Will Rogers threw four touchdowns. Huskies look good. I'm surprised, honestly, that one of the Washington State teams isn't ranked yet. The Huskies did get votes, but couldn't quite crack the top 25. After next week, almost certain that one of those teams will be ranked.
Well, and they're both teams have had powerful victories their first two games. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, not against Tier 1 competition, but they both look great. Coming into the Apple Cup in Week 3 at Lumen Field.
Yes, yeah, the neutral ground Apple Cup. That was part of the negotiated terms between the University of Washington and Washington State. A game normally should be being played in Washington State, but UW wanted to split the gate fee. And so in order to play the game, Washington State conceded, and they are playing in Lumen Field. By the way, only half the tickets for that game have been sold thus far. So might be, you know, there's 67,000 tickets available there.
Yeah.
And concerning ticket sales thus far for the gate for that game. Just a strange feeling, though. Normally the Apple Cup is played, you know, after Thanksgiving on a Friday after evening. There's chill in the air. There's snow on the field if it's on the other side of the mountains. The leaves are all brown or gone if it's on this side of the mountains. So
sure. Yeah. No.
It's just a weird feeling this year.
But I think it's going to be a great game.
Should be.
I mean, but like I said, both teams have great quarterbacks. Both Mateer for Wazoo and Will Rogers for the UW Huskies. They're both having great seasons. This is going to be a real clash. By the way, is there finally going to be a game on TV around here?
So, kind of. Unfortunately, the media
What does that mean? It's going to be in black and white?
The media mess continues. This game will be broadcast on Peacock.
Peacock. Well, that's so, the NBC streaming service.
NBC streaming service. But viewers will have to shell out, I think, $7 or $8 to stream on Peacock, which is unfortunate because, I mean, a rivalry game like this really shouldn't be kept from anyone. Ideally,
I'm with you. No, it's basically like you're buying a movie on demand.
Well, there's a bitter irony here. The Pac-12 collapsed because Washington and Oregon refused to go with a previously agreed upon, or I guess previously proposed, deal that Pac-12 ball games would be on Apple for a streaming service. Mm-hmm. And they said, no. We don't want to have our fans have to pay for streaming for games they should get on cable or broadcast television. They said that was a bridge too far to do streaming. And now in the Big Ten, Oregon and Washington are having their games subject to being available only on streaming, and this Peacock game is one of them. They'll get some games.
To which I can only say in response,
cable casts.
Oopsie.
But bitter irony there for the collapse of the Pac-12.
All right.
Yeah, Phil's right. Streaming only. So.
Speaking of collapse, we look at the state? Well, we have 47 seconds of the Seattle Mariners and their chances of making the playoffs.
Well, the Mariners, they clawed one back yesterday from St. Louis.
Big time victory.
The Mariners are in some trouble here. They are 4.5 games out of the division and 3.5 games out of the wild card. They got some work to do. And it'll start this week against the Padres, and they need Houston to lose and they need to win.
And there are how many games left?
19.
Less than 20. Well, it's a 20 game countdown. The Mariners are going to have to win, 14, 15 of those 20 games if they hope to secure a playoff spot. Very good review, Matthew Carlson. One last question. What's with this crazy new kickoff rule in the NFL? That looked weird yesterday. What's going on?
So good point. So the rule is the players cannot move until the ball has hit the turf or been touched by another player in the NFL. The goal of this new rule is to limit high-speed collisions. But the goal was also to increase kickoff returns and kickoff return yardage. So kicker kicks off from the 35, ball lands, either as a touchback or as received. And it did result in a 96-yard kickoff return yesterday by the Arizona Cardinals.
So let me see if I get this straight. The kicker kicks the ball, and everyone on the kickoff team has to stand there and wait until someone catches it, and then they can run down the field?
And on the receiving team, yes. The only people that can move back there are the kickoff receivers, or the receivings. Receiver players, who are, of which there are two. So
it sounds like electric football.
Yeah.
Remember electric football?
If
you grew up as a boy in the 70s, you remember electric football. All right. Matthew, great review. Thanks a lot. We'll check in later in the week and preview the Apple Cup. Okay, son?
Oh, always fun, Dad. All right. Love you. Take care.
You got it. Love you, too. It is 49 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570. We've had a lot of people on the text line. Again, you can always text us your thoughts, your comments, your concerns, your questions at 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. Several listeners loved the Elton John comment. Elton John was asked about Donald Trump using the song Rocket Man when he was jousting with North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un. The reporter thought he was going to be taking umbrage at Trump doing this, but listen to Trump's response.
I know that you're not a supporter of Donald Trump's. He loves your music. How did it feel when he took the lyrics to Rocket Man and he used it as a nickname for Kim Jong-un, and then he gave Kim Jong-un.
I laughed. CD. I thought it was brilliant. I just thought, good on you, Donald. I'm the Rocket Man. Yeah. I mean, Donald's always been a fan of mine, and he's been to my concerts many, many times. So, I mean, I've always been friendly towards him, and I thank him for his support. Yeah, when he did that, I just thought it was hilarious. It made me laugh.
He gave Kim one of your CDs and signed it. That was one of the books about him, because Kim, I guess, didn't know the song. So,
what's that?
He gave Kim Jong-un the signed CD.
Yes.
You know, which he'd never heard of it.
I know, because he hasn't heard of me, Kim Jong-un. Maybe he'd be very surprised if he had. I've never toured North Korea, and I have no intention of doing so. But I thought it was a light moment, and it was fun.
How about that? Probably not. Probably not what the Hollywood elite had expected to hear. But again, I have always thought that not only is Elton John great at music, not only is his music great, I think he is a wonderful human being, a very warm, decent human being. Great on you, Elton John. Hour number three of the Commute with Carlson right around the corner. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. On your morning commute, thank you for letting me be part of your listening day. Let's get right to it. We have a brand new poll out by the New York Times Siena poll, which shows some definite movement in how the American people are looking at this presidential race. The movement is back in the direction of Donald Trump. Now, you will recall that I was telling many very worried KVI listeners when Kamala Harris was getting all of this adulatory, glowing media coverage from the so-called mainstream media, I said, don't worry. I said, number one, Democrats are so relieved that Joe Biden is off the ticket, which was historic, by the way. We've never seen someone who had lined up sufficient votes for the nomination walk away from the race. Biden did. He had to. He was being pushed out. It was going to get very ugly for him, and he knew it, and he walked. So there was this euphoric sense of relief. So euphoric that all of a sudden they fell in love with Kamala, who was viewed, until Biden's disastrous debate with Donald Trump, Kamala was viewed as a millstone, as someone who was a drag on the ticket. Now she's the party savior. They didn't have time to have competition, so they just got to go with the VP. And with all of the adulatory press followed by the coronation at the Democratic convention, people were thinking, wow, is she just going to leave Trump in the dust? And I said, no, here's what's going to happen. The polls are going to show rising momentum for her, particularly among Democrats who are disaffected with Biden. And she's probably going to pull ahead of Donald Trump. In fact, she might pull ahead of him by as many as 5 points or more. Don't get nervous. The polls will swing back. Well, they swung back. It didn't take that long. This is the first real major poll since the Democratic convention. I mean, there were some immediate post-convention polls, but in the last couple of weeks, this is the first credible poll by a very highly regarded polling entity, the Siena poll. And it shows Donald Trump in front, not just among registered voters, but among likely registered voters. In other words, people who are likely to vote, who are registered to vote. He leads her by 1 point. 48-47% in the last New York Times Siena poll, she was ahead of him by 3 points. So you've got a 4-point swing in the last 3 weeks, back in the direction of President Trump. When you put the other candidates, remember, there's a bunch of people running for president, and it doesn't matter if your state has a top two rule or not. When it comes to the federal campaign for president, it's whoever qualifies for the ballot is on it. Trump's ahead by 2 points. Now, 48% is actually a higher percentage of the vote than Trump got in 2016 or 2020. And given the warm bath of national attention and criticism-free publicity that she has received, for the most part, the fact that Trump has already slipped back in the lead is really something. And not only that, it doesn't show her ahead, at least not beyond the margin of fallibility here, in any of the swing states. So this is a good place right now for the Republicans to be. It also shows that this debate tomorrow is important. As I mentioned to you earlier in the program, she's in a tough spot because what the poll finds is that people want change. And Donald Trump is seen already by the voters as the candidate of change. The second thing is that Trump is also seen as being more politically balanced, while Kamala Harris is seen as being too far to the left by significant numbers of voters. Well, this is a center-right country. They want change, but not going further to the left. So what is she going to do? If she runs to the left, she further alienates people who think that we've already gone too far to the left. If she says she'll do what Joe Biden was doing, she is running into 61% of the voters who say they want the next president to bring major change from Mr. Biden. Only 3% don't want change. And again, only 40% view her as representing change. So what's she going to do? All she can do is one thing. Demonize Donald Trump. They've thrown everything they have at Trump. They have weaponized our country's legal system to go after him from the federal level. The Justice Department charges that have been set aside by a federal judge that have been basically short-circuited by state authorities in New York trying to wreck him financially, by the county DA in Georgia, who's had more of her own problems than Trump seems to have had, Fannie Willis, and from the local city level in New York, where a disputable misdemeanor charge that for which the statute of limitations ran out years ago was somehow reinterpreted as 34 felonies. And that's what Trump was convicted of. Again, it's going to be overturned on appeal, but for the time being, Trump is technically convicted. So that's why the Democrats run around calling him a convicted felon, and they're shocked that people aren't falling for it. So, again, they've thrown everything they have. They tried to get him off the ballot. And the Supreme Court stepped in and said, no, no, that's not how it works in the United States of America. But he had been tossed off ballots, and there were another 15, 16 states poised to take him off the ballot in their state. Again, this is from the party that says they're trying to save democracy from Donald Trump. Democracy is on the line. No, it's not. No, it's not. And no, Donald Trump is not going to be an autocrat. He might get even more done. He might get even more done because it looks like now that we're going to have both a Republican House and a Republican Senate. And so a president whose party controls both houses of Congress can get more done. But we'll see. We'll see. There is a lot at stake in the debate, and I'll talk about what I think Trump needs to do and what he needs to make sure he doesn't do on tomorrow's show. We'll also be previewing the Democrat Republican square off for governor is tomorrow. That is going to be held at 8 p.m. So the debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump tomorrow at 6 p.m. That's going to be on ABC, simulcast on a bunch of other stations, including Fox. But at 8 p.m., there's another debate, Reichert versus Bob Ferguson, and that's going to be on King TV, or if you're in Eastern Washington, KREM Channel 2. The debate is going to be held at King 5 Studios. There will not be a live audience. Joyce Taylor is going to serve as the moderator. Jim Bruner of the Times will be one of the questioners, along with Gloria Ibanez of El Sol de Yakima and Mark Hanrahan from KREM Channel 2 News in Spokane. So again, that's 8 p.m. tomorrow, King 5 News, the governor's debate. I wish it wasn't on the same day. I wish these debates were on separate days, you know, for president and governor, because people might be debated out by 8 o'clock. But it's one of only two scheduled debates between Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson.
Yeah. Programming note, too, KBI has a commitment to JAMA contracts and talk shows or whatever. Our sister station, Northwest News Radio, will have the presidential debate at 6 p.m. if you're stuck in traffic, can't get next to a TV right away. And, of course, Ari Hoffman will be setting that all up with his afternoon show, too.
Of course. Yeah. You know, absolutely. All right. Quick note for all you veterans out there and all you active duty military. If you're not busy this afternoon, this evening, why don't you head out to the Puyallup Fair and watch the fair, attend the fair with your family for free. It's Military Appreciation Day. And you are admitted, all of you who are active duty, military, veteran, guard, reserve, what have you, all you need is your military ID. You and your entire family get into the fair today for free. So go for it. Enjoy it. You've earned it. You deserve it. And it's going to be a pretty nice day out at the fair. It's got mild temperatures in the low 70s. So get out there and enjoy it. It is 16 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. I want to play this quick riff by Bill Maher. Bill Maher is talking about how nasty politics is getting these days, and he uses a really good example. First, he wraps up the presidential campaign aspirations of Bobby Kennedy Jr., who again was a third-party candidate and stepped away.
couple of weeks ago, Bobby Kennedy, scion of the most storied dynasty in Democratic Party history, dropped out of the presidential race and threw his support not to the Democrat, but to Trump. And everyone all at once said the same thing. Bobby Kennedy did something weird?
And here's what he added.
I couldn't support him for president. His wife is Cheryl Hines, who Larry David was quoted as describing as the best person I've ever met, the one person in Hollywood who doesn't have a single enemy.
She was his co-star. She still is on the show, the Larry David show. Oh, but for heaven's sakes, Philip J., why am I zoning?
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Curb Your Enthusiasm. I was, you know, I still have Seinfeld in my head because he was the co-writer of Seinfeld. But yes, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Cheryl Hines played his wife, now his divorced ex-wife, in the show.
Well, now she does. Because she didn't throw her husband under the bus when her husband made a decision about something which she's made plain she disagrees with, but that didn't satisfy the obnoxious posers on the aforementioned far left.
Cheryl Hines, of course, married to Bobby Kennedy.
Thousands tweet screamed at Cheryl things like, how do you live with yourself? Do better. I can't even enjoy the episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm with you in them anymore. Yeah. It's no wonder Larry divorced you. Yeah, that's a character on TV, but okay. The tweet that got the most attention was from actor Bradley Whitford, who wrote, hey, Cheryl Hines, way to stay silent while your lunatic husband throws his support behind the adjudicated rapist who brags about stripping women of their fundamental rights. Gutsy. Great example for the kids, profile and courage. Yeah. Well, you know what I think is not gutsy? Mansplaining to a woman, but of course not to her face. How she should sacrifice her marriage. Also, you could read something on Twitter that met with your approval. You want to know why I have a bug up my about the left more than I used to? It's like this. There's an ugliness they never used to have. The liberals I grew up respecting, none of them are like this. Going after the wife, even the mafia doesn't do that.
Do you think he has a point, though? Do you think he has a point? The left really is nastier than they used to be.
Well, and so much of it just revolves around
just nasty
political expedience. I mean, the ends justify the means. I'll decry somebody who disagrees with me politically because it justifies my means. And I mean, they switch viewpoints like Kamala Harris because the ends justify the means. Yeah, that's what happens.
It's all whatever it takes to gain or keep power, we will do it.
Did you go through the story yet about diversity, equity, inclusion, promoting more Semitism or coinciding with more anti-Semitism?
I've got that rather? Story. The professors from Stanford say DEI, instead of making universities guard against anti-Semitism, is actually fueling and promoting anti-Semitism.
So that's political calling card is now diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it doesn't deliver what it promises.
No, it was just ideological, progressive leftist policies, which are at their core anti-Semitic. All right. It's 21 minutes after 8 o'clock. Philip J. said that he had a crowded dance card with social media from socialists. So let's get to it. Un momento on The Commute with Carlson. At 26 minutes. Yeah, go ahead. Turn up the radio for Philip J. Vandervoort III telling us the latest social media from socialists on The John Carlson Show.
And that song is a little Ari Hoffman synergy.
Ari Hoffman sang that song?
No, they play that on Ari's show in the afternoon from 3 to 6. It's one of their favorites on the afternoon show.
That's Big Mike's influence.
Exactly. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Let's start with Dick Cheney deciding to say, nah, can't vote, won't vote. Not going to vote for Trump. Boy, oh boy, did Democrats love that. One Democrat I follow on social media.
Again, that is who?
The person I follow or yes. Dick Cheney?
Dick Cheney
A former vice president. We'll just, for those of you joining us late.
Well, more to the point, which explains his endorsement, the father of Liz Cheney.
Former Wyoming congresswoman who joined up with Democrats on the January 6th committee investigation.
Yeah, I mean, and she tried to wreck...
Political drama.
She tried to wreck Donald Trump's career, and instead Donald Trump ended up getting her ousted from her seat in Congress by more than 30 percentage points.
Yeah. So one of the people I follow on social media is a contributor at MSNBC. He hosts a podcast called No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen. His name is Brian Tyler Cohen. And I've seen his moments pop up on MSNBC before, and he's pretty feckless on MSNBC, but he posted this information about Dick Cheney deciding that he's not going to vote for Trump, or publicly announcing he's not going to vote for Trump. And Brian Tyler Cohen wrote, "No one on the left is a Dick Cheney fan, but we can acknowledge the fact that a lifelong Republican can unconditionally put country over party in the defense of democracy, which will probably be remembered more fondly than those Republicans who just opt for sneering tweets instead." And for Brian Tyler Cohen, maybe he's not as old as I am, but I'm old enough to remember when everybody on the political left complained about Dick Cheney being a war criminal for multiple decades. And now they're all thrilled to find out that the war criminal.
And look how Hollywood how Hollywood portrayed him in that movie on his life, biopic.
Yeah. Was that one called Veep or something like that, or VP? It was the guy who played Thanos. Is that Barbara Streisand's stepson? What's his name?
Josh Brolin.
Brolin.
No.
Didn't Brolin
the person
play
who played him was... No. He's a famous actor, British actor, but he always plays American roles. Mm-hmm. I played Batman.
And he played the inspector, Commissioner Gordon, in the Batman movie?
No. That's Gary Oldman.
It's not Oldman.
No, he played Batman in one of the Batman.
Oh, Christian Bale?
Yes, Christian Bale played.
Dick Cheney, huh?
Dick Cheney.
Okay. So I just thought that was kind of juicy that the people who think Dick Cheney is a war criminal are now happy that he's not voting for Trump. So go figure. Addition by subtraction for Trump, maybe? I don't know. This I'm going to go through was a deleted tweet I found last week, and then shortly after I found it, it got deleted. So let me read through the deleted tweet. This is posted by the handle @_transit_guy. So it's just somebody who's pro mass transit. And he posted, "Single family homes occupy 35% of the Dallas, Texas land, but contribute only 4% of the city's taxable value. In contrast, multifamily and mixed-use buildings occupy just 0.2% of the land, yet contribute 40% of the city's taxable value." So it's this whole idea of high-density housing versus single-family housing, and we've had that battle here in the state of Washington. But he writes, "Single-family zoning is fiscally unsustainable." And I wrote, unsustainable for who?
Yeah.
So, and this is another example of the pro mass transit, the pro housing density people. They think that that money belongs to the government. They don't think it belongs to individuals who are paying the tax on it. They think that money belongs to the government.
Well, not only that, but their view of how people should live is jam them into condo and apartment units near
cramped
transit, have them take transit or light rail to wherever they happen to work, and that's how America should live now. Never mind this silly infatuation with having a lawn and a place for kids to play. There'll be a park down the road for them to play in.
Where the homeless are camping.
Turn left at the homeless encampment. It's just down the street.
The swing's right over there, kids.
That is how progressives want people to live in 2024. A lot of news happened after we were off the air on Friday, including the shooting death of a 26-year-old American woman, in fact, just a recent graduate from the University of Washington a couple of months ago, Aishanora Edgy, It happened in the West Bank. Of course, we're talking about the ongoing back and forth between Israelis and Palestinians in the West Bank. It happened at a rally that supporters of Palestine say was peaceful and that Israeli authorities say it was anything but peaceful. Anyway, Karina Vargas was at a rally over the weekend where friends, supporters, political allies, and comrades of this 26-year-old graduate rallied on her behalf. Happened downtown Seattle.
The streets of Seattle filled with hundreds of people protesting and marching after the killing of UW alum Aishanur Agee.
She was our sister. She was a very important person who was spreading peace within our community, who wanted to spread peace around the world. She was a loved one that the community loved, and that this protest, she was a pillar, a foundation of this protest.
She was there to push for peace. She was there. It was all about peace. So she was a pacifist then. I mean, when I hear someone was a peace activist, I generally think they must be pacifist. Yeah, not quite. Let's continue.
Dedicated, strong, and passionate were all words used to describe her. Those who knew her said they will continue to honor her and everything she stood for.
She was a brilliant, passionate, really kind soul who was deeply dedicated to justice and peace and willing to put everything on the line. She was an inspiration to all of us.
In the West Bank, Agee's attended weekly demonstrations against settlement expansion. And one of those rallies was where witnesses reported that she was shot and killed by Israeli troops.
Okay, a little more to fill out the biography of Aishanur Agee. Aishanur Agee actually grew up in West Seattle. She attended, according to a number of people who live in West Seattle, she went to Alki Elementary and then Madison Middle School, formerly Madison Junior High, and then off to West Seattle High. Basically, it's where I went to junior high and high school. She was from the class of, I believe, 2016 or 2017. And she eventually, at the age of 26, got her BA from the University of Washington. She holds dual U.S. and Turkey citizenship. It's where she was born. And again, she holds dual citizenship. As for her political activism, she was more than just a peace activist, as I'm guessing you've probably already gathered. She was an ardent supporter of Palestine and Hamas. Those demonstrations out at the UW, she not only participated in them, she was helping to plan and organize them. When she graduated, she, around her cap and gown, draped a keffiyeh. So we are talking about someone who believed that Israel had no right to be in Israel. So just to let you know, as a member of the International Solidarity Movement, she was very much a hardline activist. Now, of course, when someone dies, it's always sad and you want to remember someone in their more ideal ideal imagery. This happened 20 years ago when Rachel Corrie, who was, I think, 23 at the time, and she was killed in Gaza. She was trying to prevent an Israeli, an armored Israeli bulldozer from leveling a house that Israeli authorities said was really just over a tunnel, was basically a marking place for this artery of tunnels between Gaza and Egypt, where they were having weapons funneled and ferried. By the way, that tunnel ended up in the ensuing years being built out to the point where you could run motorized vehicles back and forth carrying weapons between Egypt. Egypt would be getting weapons, and some of those weapons from corrupt government officials would be diverted to Hamas. Rachel Corrie was trying to block that bulldozer from leveling that house way back in, I think it was 2003, and she fell off a hill under the bulldozer, and the operator of the bulldozer apparently didn't even see her. In other words, it was a horrible death, but a tragic accident. In the case of Aishanor Agee, we don't know whether she was shot by the Israeli military or by Palestinian militants who fired and hit her. We don't know. Could have been the Israelis. There was violence. Again, the idea that this was a peaceful Palestinian demonstration in the West Bank, no, it was not. Ever since October 7th, supporters, sympathizers, comrades in arms with Hamas have been making trouble in the West Bank. So there have been numerous violent flare-ups against Israeli civilians and police officers, not just the military, in the West Bank. So what is called for here is a very fair, independent, even-handed investigation. Now, I don't trust Hamas to investigate Hamas. Do I trust the Israelis to investigate Israel? Much more so. How come? It's not because Israelis are inherently more trustworthy than Arabs. Jews are more trustworthy than Arabs. That has nothing to do with it. What it has to do with is Israel is surrounded by a free press, with several elements of that free press being very anti-Benjamin Netanyahu, very skeptical of the Israeli military. They're surrounded by political opposition. The Netanyahu government surrounded by political opposition. You have people in the democracy that is Israel much more willing to get involved, just as in America, people are much more willing to get involved because they have the right to do so. So between a restive and robust population, between political opposition, and between a free press, I trust that an investigation would be carried out fully and fairly. And we will see. We will see if there is more to this story. I can guarantee you almost certainly that there is a lot more to the story. But rather than speculate, which is what everybody else is doing, they are carrying the remarks of Palestinian pro-Hamas activists, Palestinian Authority activists, as truth. Well, those aren't truth. Those are allegations. Allegations need to be confirmed. They haven't been. So the media is putting as much gloss on this story as possible, and I would urge them to just pull back. There is nothing, you know, we see this sometimes when there's a police shooting in the United States, particularly when it's a person of color. Immediately everyone everyone on one side starts to speculate and make allegations. And the media often just carry those allegations into print or over the news without any checking and balancing. And then we later find out, oh, wait, it was a whole lot different than the way it was initially reported. So let's just wait and see. It's very sad that she's dead. There's no indication yet that I've seen that she was armed. Apparently was just hit by a stray bullet. Let's wait and see and let the facts and the evidence do the talking here instead of the activists. It's coming up on 11 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh my goodness, the latest Kamala Harris flip-flop, banning plastic straws, which she called for in 2019. Now she's reversed her position on this. Here she is on CNN when she was running for president 2019 with Erin Burnett.
Plastic straws are a big thing right now.
Yeah.
Do you ban plastic straws?
I think we should. Yes. I mean, look, I'm going to be honest. It's really difficult to drink out of a paper straw when you had, if you're just, like, if you don't gulp it down immediately, it starts to bend.
Yes.
And then, you know, the little thing catches it. And then, you know, so we got to kind of perfect that one a little bit more.
So you'd ban it, but rely on innovation.
I mean, we got it. Yeah, innovation is a process, right? You don't just do it. Innovation is a process. But you know, let's encourage innovation. And yeah, I think we could do a little bit better than some of those flimsy plastic straws. But we do need to ban the plastic.
All right, we're going to have much more.
So that's twice. She says she'd ban it. Yeah, I think we should. Of course we should. Yeah, ban plastic straws.
Level 3 laughter to go with that, too.
And then that annoying cackle of hers. And then she opines about what's wrong with paper straws and said, yeah, so we have to ban the plastic straws. Again, what else is she not going to reverse her position on? The thing of it is, the earlier Kamala, that's the real Kamala. I'll tell you tomorrow what Donald Trump needs to do and what he needs to avoid. Tomorrow's big debate.